This section of the Sermon on the Mount immediately follows the opening Beatitudes. And there are two parts to this section of the sermon. The theme of the first half, you are salt and light, is the first three episodes. The theme of the second section is the fulfillment of the law. There are three verbal threads in the first section. You are the salt of the earth, / the light of the world. Salt of the earth, again, and but if salt has lost its taste. So the salt theme runs through that. There are three components of the section on light. The light of the world gives light to all, and let your light shine. So if you pay attention to those verbal threads, it will help you remember this part of the story. Jesus clearly composed all of these so that they would be memorable, and they have been. In the second section, there are two verbal threads, come to abolish, come not to abolish. And the second, whoever breaks one and teaches others will be called least, and whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So, if you notice the episodic structure, salt, light, lamp, and the law, not abolish, fulfill, until all is accomplished, so on, and the verbal threads, it's easy to internalize. So, those are some things just to notice that can help you remember it. You might even want to circle or put lines or some connections so that you can see those connections visually as well as to hear them. Again, the more you make those kind of sound, sight, and motor connections, the easier it'll be to remember the stories. The first part of this section is Jesus' affirmation of the great value of his listeners. Probability is that Jesus' audiences were discouraged, depressed, thought that they could do nothing, could make no difference in the world. They were, after all, subject to the Roman Empire, and the Romans operated on the theory that the way to run an empire is to dominate people and to keep them from rebelling by convincing them that they had little value, little power, and could make no difference. It was very hard to resist that. So Jesus is actively resisting that. The Romans taught peace comes through power and domination. Jesus taught peace comes through all the values identified in the Beatitudes and doing them happily and openly. So the spirit of the first part is a spirit of encouragement and affirmation at a very high level. Jesus is building up those who are listening to him. So I would suggest that you do that in terms of the spirit in which you tell this first part of the section. And it's addressed to your listeners. You are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth, and so on. The second part is an affirmation of the law and its importance. This is rabbinic discourse in response to folks who were hoping and or teaching that Jesus was an antinomian, that is, against the law. Matthew composed his gospel in the 80s. And it may be that this statement of Jesus is in reaction to Pauline emphasis on the transcendence of the law by the power of grace. Paul was often understood as being opposed to the law. So, for example, you have died to the law. Now we are discharged from the law, dead to that which held us captive, in Romans 7. You might also see Galatians 2:19-21 and 3:21-22. So, in John, the law came through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. There were also strong antinomian groups within Rabbinic Judaism as well as within the early Jewish Christian movement. There were Jewish Gnostics. There was the Merkabah mysticism movement that diminished the importance of the law and the observance of the law. Furthermore, within the context of first century and late first century Rabbinic Judaism, the Hillel school of rabbis was steadily modifying and often reinterpreting the law in less demanding ways. For example, that it was justified for a woman to divorce, or for a man to divorce his wife if she insulted him or habitually burned the food. Jesus' context, this was heard as a highly conservative interpretation of the law, this teaching of his about that everything will be fulfilled. That's also the case in relation to Jesus' ruling on divorce, as we will see later. The audience in this section is addressed as the disciples who came to him, whom he taught along with the crowds. It's especially important to hear this statement within the context of first century Judaism because this last statement has often been heard as anti-Jewish. So to paraphrase, unless it has been heard by Christians over the centuries, unless your righteousness as Christians exceeds that of the Jews and the scribes and the Pharisees, then you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So this has often been heard as Jesus talking to Christians and affirming that Christians are more righteous than Jews. But of course, Jesus was talking to Jews. And Matthew clearly intended that his audiences were addressed as Jews. That is, when he presented Jesus' speeches, he always addressed his audiences as the person presenting Jesus as being various Jewish groups, as is the case here in the Sermon on the Mount. It's the disciples and all the people, that is the Jewish people of Galilee, who had gathered around him. For us today, Jesus calls on us as Jewish Christians to a righteousness of spirit and the overall impact of what Jesus was saying was to reinforce the teaching that righteousness comes from a full righteousness of spirit. And Jesus is steadily emphasizing this aggressive character of righteousness to transform the world. And a righteousness then that comes from a full-bodied assent to God's will and purpose for the world.